Okay, so let's talk about in the 60s. I think you had a promotion, The Summer of Love, in 67.
Okay, that was right after we had gone to the drink thing. And that was when the Summer of Love thing was really big out on the coast. In fact, the hippie thing was pretty much spreading all over. And Kelly was saying, oh, that's a little hippie format. That'll never work around here, until it was working around there. And we did a promotion where we had the listeners choose Tulsa's all-time top 300. And we'd open the request lines three or four times a day and take them down. And we wrote them down. In my slipshod secretarial science way of doing it, John, I came up at one point where I had one Elvis song that was on the all-time top 300 at 400 different places, including once in the top 20. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I massaged all that and I got it put together, and we played that on our Summer of Love. Mm. We counted them down from 300 to number one. Wow. And then we gave away something to do with that. I don't remember. We were always giving away stuff.
During that time, I believe that long song, Light My Fire by the Doors, it was a 7-minute song. What did you do?
7-minute song, and we played the full 7 minutes. Mm. I'm trying to think. There were a couple other things that night we would play the full thing, but that was the one. Everybody else playing the little 2-minute, 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 45-second cut down version. And we'd say, okay, time to hit the pool. Mm-hmm. And I'd start that 7-minute record, already have my bathing suit on, go to the trade winds, dive in, take a sip on some lady's beer, come back, towel off, and come in just as it ended, and hit the next one. I mean, you know, it became a set piece around the second. Get out of the way, Scoots, go into the pool. I mean, you know, it was so non-professional and so childish.
Of course.
But it was also so successful. So I can give me all sorts of bad marks for conduct, but I can't give me bad marks for distance and score.
Did you ever have a record run out on you and you weren't in the studio?
Who didn't?
Right.
I'm trying to... Not so much at KAKC, although we had a couple of really funny ones at KAKC, but I had one time when I was working in Lafayette, Louisiana. We were in a bank building with no bathroom at our own station. Our station was like at the farthest end of the building from the bathrooms. There were no speakers in the bathroom. I was doing 3 to 7 Monday through Friday, but on Saturday they maybe come in and do 6 till noon, which meant that I didn't get out of the station until about midnight or 1. I got out of the station at 7 on Friday, but then I went out and partied till midnight or 1. Then I had to be back in for 6. I came in this one morning, and I mean, I was paying the dues because I'd partied really stupid. And so I looked up, and coming up formatically at the top of the hour was the Robert Palmer song, Sneaking Sally Through the Alley. Well, that was on an LP that started out with Hey Julia, then something else, and then Sneaking Sally. So what was normally about a 3-minute song came out to be close to an 8.5-minute song. So I took my little stopwatch, I started it, I grabbed my newspaper, I ran around to the bathroom, I sat down, I read the sports page, I read the comics. I got back with 40 seconds left and walked in, and he was still about 20 seconds left into the first song. Yeah. And I had been telling the bosses, look, you're wasting me in the morning. This is an album rock station. On Saturday morning, nobody's up. The phone never rings. I walked in, and every phone in the building was on. So it took me another 2 years to get off that darn Saturday show.
Did you, payola, did that ever affect you at all? Were you offered money to play?
The closest I ever came, John, when I was in Memphis, I had an MG, a sports car. And my lady and I were driving back to Tulsa for a friend's wedding, and something blew out in it, and I had to take a rental car, and we had to drive the rest of the way doing rental car, and then I had to get the car fixed and had to get somebody to go get it. And, you know, because my gold medal flake MG was quite the talk of Memphis radio, and especially the radio people, everybody's going, Soxless, we heard that your car got a problem and you had to pay for it, and we think that's unfair. I said, well, I probably didn't take care of it. It's my fault. It's okay. He said, well, and this guy came over to my house, John, at like at 7:31 morning, promoter for one of the smaller but very influential labels. He said, and so, Scooter, we've got this group that thinks pretty highly of you and thinks pretty lowly of people who would rip you off that way. So we put together this little fund. And he laid an envelope down there. I said, I won't say his name. I said, sir, I am so touched by this and so honored, but I'm going to go in and take my shower and shave and get ready for work. So I trust when I come back, neither you nor that envelope will be here, and we'll never hear about this again. And we never did. I don't know if he gave the money back to the other people, or it was his and his bosses or what, but that was the only time that I was ever even marginally offered anything. I guess the word went out, this guy ain't going for it, and was happy for me because I didn't want to have to hurt anybody's feelings, but I also didn't want to be Alan Freed 2.0.
I still have dreams every once in a while, and I wonder if you do, that you think you're on the radio and somehow you can't get in the studio, or you can't, and you're working all night, and it's such a relief when I wake up in the morning that I'm not on the radio. Is that happening to you?
Oh, it hasn't happened in a while, John, but it does happen. In fact, when it first happened, at the time I was in a radio forum group online, and I mentioned it, and then it was just like open a transom, you know, billions of, oh, here's how mine went. And they were all the same thing. You come back from the bathroom, the song is about ready to end, you come running in, and there's not only not a song on the turntable, there's not a rack of music to pick songs from, and there's not another turntable.
Right.
But now that I'm saying that, I've had that dream off and on. I haven't had it in a few years now, so I'll email you tonight if I have it, as it just touches it off. But I had a thing actually happen one time at KAKC that was the dream, only it was real. Freedom 7 capsule was going around on the tour when that was the big hoorah one summer. And it came to Tulsa, and they had the thing on a display down by Central High.
Now let me just ask you, is that the Mercury 7?
Yeah, Mercury 7. But then they called it, when they sent it out, they did something, they called it the Freedom 7. And so we changed our group name, because at the time we'd still been the Big 7 DJs. We changed ours to the Freedom 7 DJs, and we were down there, and I was doing my Saturday midday show from a trailer sitting in the basically in the shade of Central High School, and doing it with actual turntables. Hmm. And the turntables we had the little ridges that came up. I think there were eight of them that went around, so that if you put a 45 on it, you could definitely get it settled down there. Mm-hmm. And so when I went back to the studio for news at 12:55, I queued up my next record and went to the porta potty and took care of business and came back just as he said, it's Will Jones, it's 12 noon, beep. And I hit the thing and I looked over and the record had melted into the turntable. Don't ask what happened next, because that's a blank. That part of the dream is when I woke up.
But that was a real one.
And when I first started having the dream, I thought it was because of that. And then everybody said, oh, no, you actually had the dream in real life. We just settled for dreaming. I always did have to get the real thing.
Yeah. That's great. You know,